You are Locked On the NFL, your daily NFL podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Well, hello, hello, hello. I am Matt Williamson. This is the Locked On NFL Podcast. How is it shaking? I apologize. I did not get you guys a Friday show. That was actually the day my son was getting out of the hospital. So I spent a whole lot of time with him and getting him situated. And I just didn't have anything lined up because I didn't know how that was going to go. But I bounce back huge with you with Trevor Sikkema. Trevor, what is up, man? How are you?
Hey, it's good to be with you, Matt. Good
Absolutely. You know, I had your partner in crime, John Ledyard, on last Tuesday talking tight ends. And if you guys are not dialing into the Locked On NFL Draft podcast, shame on you for 6 weeks. You need to do that. And let's talk combine, brother. It's got right around
sure,
the corner.
Yeah.
Right around the corner.
Yeah.
I will be leaving Tuesday morning, driving 6 hours to Indy, staying until Saturday evening to do radio the whole time. Are you going?
Yes. Oh, yeah. We'll be there. The Draft Network crew, the Locked On NFL Draft podcast guys, we will be there in full. So
nice.
I'm very excited about it.
I'll have to hook up with you guys and buy you a cold one.
There you go. I'll never say no to that.
So. Right. So, to you, which position group or groups are most important for you this year and why?
Yeah, so, you know, it kind of varies from year to year, depending on the crop of guys
sure. That's
there. And I'm
just
sure we'll
to
get
stop
into
you real quick, and I apologize, because most people are probably like, isn't it just wide receivers and corners because to see how fast they run? Well, there's more right. To it than that. I'm asking a little
right. Deeper
question.
Right, right. No, it is. And because there are a lot of drills that go into it. There are a lot of situations and things that go into it. And certainly, yeah, the point of the athletic test is that you want to make sure these guys are athlete enough to play at the next level, because there are plenty of guys, you know, like, for example, a guy I really liked last year was Auden Tate from Florida State. And he came to the combine and he just had some terrible testing times. And then it was just kind of like, man, you know, I like his tape. I still like who he is as a football player. I'd be okay with him being a depth player on my roster. But when you're not the athlete that you need to be, that garners you not being a high selection or being prioritized in the draft. So this year, there's a couple of positions.
You've got to have a
baseline. Oh, for sure. Yeah. And that's why these thresholds exist. You hear about that all the time. Like, oh, you know, corners got to run this fast, or they're not going to be able to keep up with the majority of wide receivers and all that kinds of stuff. So cornerback, though, it is one of them this year that I'm really going to have my eye on, because, you know, I would say the top four corners from almost everybody in the draft this year would be Byron Murphy from Washington, mm-hmm. Greedy Williams from LSU, DeAndre Baker from Georgia, and then probably Amani Arawarie from Penn State. And with all those guys, you like what you see on film. There's a lot of really good things that you like. But for three out of four of them, you know, I'm really looking to see what kind of athletes they are, because
sure. It's
so important for the position.
A guy like Baker, people were questioning his athleticism.
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
Right. Going into the year, a lot of people were super high on DeAndre Baker.
Because he's good at football, yeah.
Right. But I was one of those people who I was a little bit hesitant on him, just because I'm like, oh, man, you know, when he's trying to track guys nine routes down the field, he's not really keeping up with them as easy as he needs to be. And so he's a big one who I'll have a lookout for. And I just think that the combine as a whole could really help shape and solidify, clear up the picture for that cornerback class. Linebacker's another one, just because we're not really sure how the linebacker class is shaping up behind, say, guys like Devin Bush, Devin White, Mack Wilson. Plus, you know, you want to see how those guys run as well. Wide receiver every year is a big one. You know, mm-hmm. you need the better athletes, the bigger, better athletes. You know, guys like DK Metcalf or Arcega Whiteside or Hakeem Butler, guys with bigger size. You want to see, hey, if these guys are freak athletes at their size, you want to figure that out. And then obviously edge rusher too. You know, those 10-yard splits, being able to have that first step off the line of scrimmage, bend around the edge, show what they can do in the three-cone drill, all that kinds of stuff is really important for this year's class.
It's safe to say, too, that this receiver group is deep, but people are going to have them ranked all over the place. So there might be a lot of tiebreakers finished.
Yeah, no, absolutely. It's a good way to put it.
Okay. I don't want to spend a lot of time on Kyler Murray, because I think he is going to be the number one story of Indy. You know, what's his size? What's he going to do? But we have to touch on a little bit. I mean, my hunch is if he ends up at 5'10", that's a win for him, right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, the big one is even though it's funny, you know, because we're sitting here talking about a quarterback and we go, oh man, if he's 5'10",
yeah,
that's
way to
good.
Go. Yeah.
So very weird to be talking about it like that, but certainly height, weight, getting the official measurables on Kyler Murray is a big deal. And there have been some pictures that have been floating around just, you know, him like out somewhere or out of basketball games or training or whatever it is. And he looks like he's put on some weight too. So you want to see if he shows up a little bit bigger and if he's still as fast as he was then. And then two,
I wonder if he runs, if he puts on the weight, though.
Right,
you know
right.
What I mean, or does any of those drills. Right.
Right, and that's the thing that is also the drama kind of surrounding Kyler Murray is like, hey, man, he was so wishy-washy, you know, when we saw in the interviews during Super Bowl week, like, oh, I don't know if I'm going to play. I don't know if I'm going to show up to the combine. I don't even know if I'm going to play football yet. And it was like, okay, dude, you kind of need to have a better plan.
You better have a plan by now, brother. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, so that's not really something NFL teams are looking to hear. You know, look at a guy like Baker Mayfield last year, right? I mean, I don't think that he was the solidified number one overall draft pick, say, in January. But
no, or February.
He was still a top quarterback prospect, and he went to the Senior Bowl, you know, when he didn't have to. He threw at the combine. He did everything at the combine when he didn't have to. And I think teams really like that. They said, this dude will not back down from proving that he's the best. And I think that that's something that obviously stood out in the mind of the Browns front office. That's something that Kay probably gave him the edge as the number one overall pick. And that's kind of what's surrounding Kyler Murray and a little bit of the drama that he has there. Is he going to run? Is he going to throw? Or is he just going to show up? And then, of course, the interview is going to matter a lot, too. So there's a lot of drama, yeah, surrounding Kyler Murray there.
Yeah, of course. And what's your opinion in general when evaluating quarterbacks with throwing at the combine? I mean, to me, I don't care if they miss receivers. I know they're throwing against air, but they've never seen these guys. My value of watching them throw at the combine, the two things I care most about, and one of them's hard to quantify, is it's a level playing field. The conditions are the same for all. And I absolutely think at that position, there's something to gain being in the same building watching these guys throw as opposed to just seeing it on tape. I mean, and people ask me this all the time, you know, when you're scouting, is it important to see, you know, quarterbacks live? And I always say yes, but I don't have a great reason why. I wish I could answer that better, but I love just watching them throw the ball in person, how it comes out of their hand, the sounds, you know, all the things you can't get from tape. And the other thing I'm warming up to, too, with the combine, and I know the guys like Deshaun Watson have kind of proven me wrong, but I do want to see decent miles per hour speed on the ball, because not that you have to have a cannon in this league, but if you struggle to throw out routes or outside the numbers,
right,
and Belichick knows it, you know what I mean? If you're Matt Schaub, and you don't have to have a cannon, but that far hash out route, you got to be able to generate some RPMs, and I want to see guys being able to do that, you know, with numbers.
Yeah, no, certainly. There's, you know, people talk about arm strength, and normally when they do scouting, a lot of people who do amateur scouting, they put arm strength in one box. Like, oh, if
you
check the body, like if he makes a 60-yard throw, people go, oh, okay, he's got the arm. But there is absolutely a difference between ball distance and ball velocity. You know, Daniel Jones is one of those guys who, when I watched Daniel Jones early tape this year, he could get the ball 50, 60 yards down the field with trajectory. You know, he's, you know, arching his back, popping it, knowing how far he's got to lean back to release the ball, and he can get the ball down there. But when it comes to ball velocity, he doesn't have that nearly as much as some other guys. And so there's definitely two areas there. You get to see a little bit of it at the combine, and, you know, is throwing overrated? It depends how you look at it. You know, certainly the game film is what's most important, because you're not throwing against air. You're not throwing, you know, in just your underarm gear.
People are bearing down on you. And right. Yeah.
Sure. Right.
Wind,
but
right.
To your point, though, I do think it's very fun to, hey, all right, Baker Mayfield, go up and throw this ball. And then 2 seconds later, all right, Josh Allen, get up here and throw this ball. All right, Sam Darnold, you know, get up and throw this ball. You know, something like when all of these guys get to throw the same route, the same pass, like back to back to back.
Same conditions, one-stop shopping. You know,
yeah,
right,
it is cool to watch. And I like just having a – you know, you talked about there watching guys live. I do like to have as many looks at a guy as I can get on tape, live in games, live at the combine, all this kind
Senior
of stuff.
Bowl, right.
It's all, you know, dependent on how you making sure you measure it the right way, take it in emphasis the way that you can. I think throwing at the combine can be useful, yeah.
Yeah, I do too. I mean, don't if you're sitting there at home watching him, and boy, he's not accurate. He's missing dudes. Don't worry about that. And the things that we brought up there, I think, are more important. Folks, you can get your podcast, you know, either this one or Locked On NFL Draft or any of the Locked On networks on Spotify, Apple, Google Podcasts. And I need you to do me a favor. When you get in the car, tell your smart device to play podcast Locked On NFL. That's something we're really pumping right now. It generates a lot of traffic, and I listen to podcasts all the time when I'm driving. So I need you to do that for me. I'm going to be back here with Trevor in a moment to talk more about what to look for at this combine. So we'll be right back. All right, here we go. To pull back the curtain, you know more about this stuff than I do, and I've had a busy week, so I ask you a favor. Can you come up with a handful of topics to discuss, you know, going into this combine?
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not calling you out by any means, but number four was why interviews matter just as much as testing results. And I think this is a really good topic. For those that don't know, I mean, the history of the combine was really devised to get a bunch of doctors all in the same place. And
right.
The number one important thing here is medical. And most of us aren't going to know what they find. But when your favorite player falls, it's probably medical. If it's not that, it's something off the field, personal, red flag, that direction. My only beef with the way you worded this, though, is the combine is weird to me because I've sat in that room where it's like room after room after room, and for 15 minutes a dude walks in, shakes hands for a minute or two, sits down, smiles comfortable, and 15 minutes later a horn blows and he goes to the next room. Like, you can kind of fake it. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
the interviews are cool, and sometimes you see these guys after practice and all that, but they're so tired and their days are so stressed that I think that you can make mistakes that way too.
That's a fair point, but I do think that
they are important. Don't get me wrong.
When we talk about interviews, it really is kind of just that behind the curtain, almost what you were saying there, that we don't get to know as draft analysts, right? I mean, there is a whole other side of picking a person as much as you are picking a player that we don't really get to experience. And I think that that's why you'll see guys, and to your point, yeah, medicals are also a big deal. Probably should have thrown the word medicals in there too, because that is such a huge deal about the combine. But I do think that there is, you can fake it, but I also think the teams, I believe, are getting better at trying to kind of cut through these cookie cutter answers or these rehearsed speeches that these players might have. And I think that just getting to know, and I think the reason why I certainly put that in there is because of, you know, that phrase that I said right there, you are drafting a person just as much as you are drafting a player, right? I mean, you've got to be able to draft work ethic. I mean, if this guy is going to be a star, he's got to be some of a face of your franchise. If he makes it to a second contract, you're going to be paying this guy a lot of money, sometimes more, sometimes less, depending on the position. And you've got to be able to truly make an investment in this person just as much as you are for what they're doing on the field and what they're doing off. And so that's kind of why that I said that, just to kind of emphasize that there is this other side of scouting that we don't get a lot of look at, right? I mean, we can look at a guy and say, oh, you know, he was a captain for 2 years, or, oh, his players talk nice about him. But, you know, those could be anything. You know, they could get that without warranting it. And all of a sudden teams kind of find out, maybe they were caping for this guy a little bit more than they should have off the field and all that. So that's why I do think that interviews matter, just because everybody loves and why I wanted to talk about that, because everybody loves the 40 times. They love the verticals. They love the drills and the bench press, all that kinds of stuff. But what goes on behind closed doors certainly matters too when you're at the combine.
Yeah, it does. And to back your point up, I mean, I wasn't criticizing it at all, but the year that I was with the Browns, I was a new scout, and on two of the days, my job was get up super early, gather up a position group, go to all their rooms, wake them up, get them all in a line like Mother Duck, you know, and get them ready for their drills. And you know, some of them are rare and ready to go. Some of them are tired and grumpy.
Yeah.
You know, like, they're human beings. They're like, dude, I don't want this.
You were the drill sergeant.
A little bit. I mean, I had to get them all lined up to get them to the turf. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
And they didn't want to do that. They were up all night. They barely slept. You know, they're nervous. Some of them are grumpy. You know, and so you see that kind of thing. I mean, it's a long day. And then another one.
For sure.
There was I was at the Browns, and there was a guy that would end up going to the top 10. He was a big time stud talent. And we finished our 15 minutes. And as he was walking out the door, an experienced scout said to him, Pro Bowl or Super Bowl? And he went, oh, Pro Bowl. You know, and it was like, we were a little worried about his selfishness to begin with, but that caught him off guard. And you kind of could tell he was more about himself than the team. You know, I mean, small example, but those kind of things stick with you though.
Yeah, for sure. Nope.
Yeah.
Yep.
Who are a couple players? Can you highlight, you know, three or four guys maybe that this is maybe most important for? Like, they could make some bucks here.
Oh, defense. I'll start on defense first.
Okay.
And I mentioned him a little bit there. Greedy Williams, is the guy who I think has the chance to make the most money because, you know, he kind of went into the year as a for sure top five, top 10 pick. You know, his tape this year showed a little bit of a guy who might have been reading some early mock drafts, saw he was getting going top 10, didn't really have a desire to tackle or be involved in plays where he knew the ball wasn't coming his way, all that kinds of stuff. So you could see him coast a little bit, but certainly the highs were still there. You know, it's a bigger, longer corner, plays man coverage really well, has good instincts with his back to the ball. And those are the kind of corners that you love to prioritize. Those are the guys that you can put in man coverage, that you can put on an island. So here's the thing. If Greedy runs really well, if he has really good athletic numbers this weekend, people aren't going to care about the laziness on tape. They're just not.
Yeah, maybe so I'd have done that too. Right. Yeah.
Right. So like he's going to be a top 10 pick, I think, if he runs really well. And if he doesn't, you know, if he is a little disappointing, then all of a sudden you could convince yourself like, well, he didn't test that well, didn't give good effort in his last year, then you might be able to slot him down a little bit. So I think he's got a lot of money to gain. And then on the offensive side
of the
ball.
On him, at his height, I would be really interested to see his W drills and his change of direction drills too. You know, his shuttles in particular. Can he really change direction?
Certainly.
You know, and of course, the 40 is important too for him.
Right, because when you're playing man coverage like that, you got to be able to mirror. He's got to be able to move side to side. He's got to be able to flip his hips, all that kinds of stuff. So I agree with you there.
Is there an offensive dude?
Offensive side, I would say J.J. Arcega-Whiteside, wide receiver from Stanford, because this is a bigger-bodied guy. Truly what you would look at him and you think, okay, this guy's a red zone threat. But he showed some more athleticism than I thought he was going to. He's got quicker feet. He can run in a straight line. And, man, if he runs – if he runs high 4.5s even – he's going to make some money because he is fantastic in the air, boxing out smaller defenders. He's great catching the ball away from his frame. He does everything that you would want from a big receiver. But then also, if he kind of shows that he has the athleticism to be a straight line guy, a guy who might be able to stretch the field, and we'll see what his three cone time is too, then we're talking about, okay, this is a top 50 wide receiver that you better pick. So I'd say that those two guys probably have the most money to make.
Those are good ones. And I learned something from Greg Cosell and it's kind of a Mike Evans theory, and we'll get to your bucks here in a minute, that doesn't always look like he's running like a Tyreek Hill or a DeSean Jackson, but you can't forget about the stride length of some of these long receivers. You know, that maybe doesn't take as many steps to get him 50 yards downfield because he eats up so much grass. But on tape, they don't always look as fast, but you're like, why is he separating? I mean, those long striders can really be faster than you think.
Yep, agreed.
Yeah. Along those lines, if you have a hunch, like, who's going to be the freak? Who's going to be the guy like, wow? I mean, we didn't know what numbers this guy puts up. I mean, is there any freaky candidates for you?
DK Metcalf, the wide receiver from Ole Miss. He is literally going to put up Julio Jones numbers.
You think?
I swear he is. Now, Julio, I think Julio ran a 4.39. His vertical was right around 40. I can't remember what his broad jump was. But, like, DK is going to put up Julio Jones numbers. This guy is a freak of nature. We have talked to the people who are training him. We've talked to the people from Ole Miss. And I believe that – you know, there's a prop bet out there right now talking about, like, who runs what in the 40. And I think DK's 40-yard dash right now on the prop bet started off at a 4.59, and that's the easiest bet I'm ever going to place in my entire life.
If so you're right, is he a top 10 pick for sure? Top six? I mean, like...
I would pick DK top 10.
Yeah, I would.
Totally, I think. Because the thing at Ole Miss, too, is, like, people look at the numbers and they're like, okay, well, he didn't have that many catches or receptions. His market share for the offense wasn't really that one-sided. But Ole Miss's offense was real weird last year. Where they prioritized the ball, how Jordan Te'amo was taught to go through progressions, where he was looking. All I know is that, yes, I think DK Metcalf certainly needs some cleaning up and some nuances to expand his route tree to make sure that he is just as good at other routes as he was just the three or four that he ran primarily at Ole Miss this past year. But if that's the thing, the only thing that I'm looking for, I have got dominant tape on almost every single other route that he has run. And so I've got to think that he could develop that. If he gets with a coach that's a great route running teacher, that he will absolutely be worth a top 10 selection.
And so, I think if you're a great receiver coach and your GM says, look at this piece of clay I just gave you. Holy smokes. Yeah, right. I'll pay whatever you want for that.
Yep. And then on defensive side, I'll just say, I don't know about freak, but like I think Chauncey Gardner-Johnson is going to have an awesome combine week. And he's a safety corner hybrid guy who kind of came into the year, had a real down 2017 year, just had some bad missed tackles, had some lapses in coverage. But his 2018 was way better than his 2017. He got a lot better in man coverage, was physical with tight ends. He was fast with slot receivers. I think that he could put up some really nice numbers at the combine. So I'll say that him too.
Your boy Ledger's really high on him too. I'm sure you know that. Just listening to both your descriptions and not watching him yet for myself, but just knowing how this league works, that screams a first round pick. You know, like
top 50 at least.
Yeah,
sure.
There's a lot of things coaches and teams are going to like about him.
Yep.
Another quick break, and since you're on, I just want to ask you a couple of things about the Bucks, if that's cool. Sure. Does that work for you? All right, we'll be back here in a moment. A lot changing in Tampa. What's your initial takes on the coaching staff? I'm actually maybe more interested in the defensive side because they've been such a 4-3 strict zone, you know, boring old school defense for so long. Todd Bowles, who I'm very high on, by the way. He was our defensive back coach when I was with the Browns. I think he's a phenomenal hire, but it's going to take some movement to get his pieces there.
Yeah, no, for sure. I think that basically the entire staff all the way around, I thought was home runs, the way that they set things up. It's an all-star coaching staff, I think, under a guy like Arians. And for Bowles, too, man, I've said this for years, you know, really ever since they moved on from John Gruden back in the late 2000s, you know, Raheem Morris took over the team as head coach, and Raheem tried to run the same sort of defense that Gruden did, right? So you keep the same players, and then when that defense didn't work, they hired Schiano, and Schiano looked at the roster and went, okay, this is the type of defense that we have for the players that we have, so we're going to run this type of defense. Guess what? It didn't work. He gets fired. Lovie Smith comes in, goes, okay, these are the players that we have for this certain defense. They played that. It didn't work. So every step of the way, they've done what you're supposed to do, where like a coach will say, we're gonna run our scheme around our players. And that's what you're supposed to do as a coach because you want to make the most out of your talent. But for the Buccaneers, the problem was they kept running the same scheme with the same bad players. And they kept replacing them with old archaic style of defensive players.
There has
never been this cut and dry, this is how we're gonna change, this is how we're gonna improve things. You hope until now, because Todd Bowles is much more of an aggressive coach who has been around a while, knows what he likes to do on defense, knows how to make the changes. And so I think that for the first time, you're really going to see a cut and dry, like, hey, we are moving on to a different defense. Yes, we're going to play around our players, but we are not going to play that soft stuff we played before. And so I think it's a great hire for the Bucks.
All right, I'm going to give you a couple names. Give me a yes or no if they're Tampa Bay Buccaneers next year. Cool.
Ooh, okay.
McCoy.
I think he is. I think he is going to be a
restructure.
There is a chance of that because they do have to have some cap room that they've got to make for a couple of these other guys, Donovan Smith, Quan Alexander, you know, Adam Humphries. All these guys need new deals. And so I do think there might be a restructure in place, but I think one way or the other, I think McCoy is back.
Quan Alexander's on my list too.
Oh man, that one's truly, it's truly a coin toss. But if
I would bet no, if I have to put a bet.
I just tough one. The thing is that I don't know what other teams are willing to pay him, right? Because coming off an ACL, he's a linebacker that uses athleticism as his calling card, and so that's always a risk there. The Bucs already have Kendall Beckwith. They have Lavonte David. How much money are they willing to spend at linebacker? I will say gut feeling, Quan is back on the Buccaneers, though, next year. I think they figure out how to do it.
Ryan Fitzpatrick.
I'm going to say no. And I'm going to say no because of what happened last year. Jameis Winston, this entire 2019 season has to be all about Jameis Winston.
No
it
doubt.
Has to. They have to devote everything to him. So they cannot afford...
I'm buying stock in him, by the way.
So, I mean, yeah. I kind of would, too. I think that the Arians connection is going to be a good one for him.
Yeah.
I think that you can't get, say, like Jameis has two bad games back-to-back. You can't get people to start clamoring for Ryan Fitzpatrick. You just can't. Mm-hmm. You cannot allow that to be the case. That's why I think that they have
smart,
to move
yeah.
on from Ryan Fitzpatrick.
Yeah, I like the way you said that. Lev Bell.
No.
Of course you say no, but...
It's a really interesting thought process because they certainly need a dynamic person at the running back position. Ronald Jones had a really bad first rookie season, and so Le'Veon Bell is a really interesting proposition.
Make Winston's life a lot easier.
But they just don't have the cap space to do it, I think.
I think you're right. DeSean Jackson?
No, he's got to be gone. He's gone. I know that Arians and the staff have been like, oh, yeah, you know, we'd love to have him back. You can't. His time is gone. Jameis Winston has almost let it slip a couple of times now in interviews, basically saying that DeSean didn't want to practice, didn't want to practice hard, didn't want to go all the way, only wanted to show up on Sundays, and that's just not going to be the case this year.
And then my last one, and I'm torn what I would do with Donovan Smith. I mean, he's not a franchise left tackle, but you don't want to try to replace him. He's durable. He's, I guess, ascending. Right. I wouldn't mind keeping him motivated with a franchise tag and keep that carrot out there for him.
That's what I would do, actually. Yeah. If it were up to me, I would franchise tag him. And I think that Donovan Smith is back on the Buccaneers no matter what, whether it is on the franchise tag or if they get a long-term deal for him. It's going to be one of the two. Like you said, they don't want to have to deal with moving on from him and finding his replacement with this free agent class or with this offensive tackle class at number five. They think that their better strategy here is to keep him at left tackle, draft another offensive lineman at some point, and make something happen. But he's going to be a Buccaneer next year.
Yeah, I think you're right. You can't make that move right now. Yeah. Last question for you. Do you have a name or two that you think is really in play at number five?
Ooh,
if you had to put a chip down right now.
Devin White.
Ooh. Especially if Alexander's gone, obviously.
Yeah, obviously the Alexander move is going to be – you wonder what's going to happen there. But if they are going to move to more of a 3-4 set and they're going to be playing their linebackers all the time in different kinds of rotations, I think Devin White is absolutely in play at number five.
Yeah, I could also see Tampa being a trade-down candidate for sure.
Yes. Jason Light loves to play the game of the draft. He loves to have more picks, so I could see that too.
Trevor, you are the man. Please tell everyone where they can find you. And folks, if you're not listening to Locked On NFL Draft, you're just doing it wrong right now, especially this time of year.
Sure, yeah, no, most of my time is spent on Twitter.com, so at Tampa Bay Trey. If you guys don't follow me, you can follow me there. And then, of course, doing all my draft work over at thedraftnetwork.com, doing the Locked On NFL Draft podcast with John Ledyard, and, you know, hopefully enjoying a cold one with you next week at the Combine.
Yeah, absolutely. Folks, that's a wrap. I have a guest tentatively lined up for Monday that you're going to like quite a bit, and then Tuesday there will not be a show. That's a total travel day for me. And then I'm going to play things by ear from the Combine, but I'm hoping to get a lot of good stuff sent your way. Glad we could do this today. Thanks again, Trevor. This was awesome.
Yeah, thanks, man.